Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Success Solutions Live. I'm your host, Robert Ben L. Browning. The purpose of this show is to share radio programs that seamlessly grow people, relationships, and organizations to their full potential. Our guests are a mix of successful authors, speakers, and thought leaders inspiring achievement and balance in life and business. And today is another show that I'm extremely excited to introduce, the third new agreement, Be a Systems Thinker, The Power of Systems Thinking in the Workplace, with our guest, David Dibble. How are you, David?
Well, I am great, Robert. It's so great to be here and be with you again. So, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about systems thinking today.
Yeah, the whole idea of the new agreements, and in particular this agreement, I have to say, has me particularly excited. And as we do, I'll just quickly introduce our guest, a little bit about him, and then we'll roll in right into these important questions today. David Dibble, a former CEO, a keynote speaker, trainer, consultant, executive coach, and systems thinker, has written four books, including The New Agreements in the Workplace, The New Agreements in Healthcare, and, of course, others. For more than 25 years, David has consulted and trained in the workplace with a focus on his system-based four new agreements for leaders and managers. This remarkable leadership and management model is based upon the law of dissipative structures, which won a Nobel Prize in 1977. Deep, sustainable change and measurable improvements using this model have provided remark of more traditional change management or system improvement programs such as Six Sigma or Lean. It's also notable that for 8 years, David worked directly with Don Miguel Ruiz, the author of The Four Agreements, one of my favorites, I must confess. Prior to that, he was a serial entrepreneur founding multiple businesses, one which he grew to a profitable $10 million in sales and 200 employees. David became an expert on systems thinking and systems improvement in the practical application of his own businesses, of the pioneering work of W. Edward Deming, Peter Senge, and the great Buckminster Fuller. Welcome. Such a pleasure to have you on again, David.
Oh, thank you so much, Robert. It's always great to be with you and, of course, to talk a little bit about this model. We think it's an evolutionary step forward for leaders and managers and can really make a difference in the world.
I would agree. After getting to know your body of work over a few months and working close with you, you know, as simple as it is, I'd like to just jump right in with David. What is systems thinking?
Well, that's a great question, and it's one that comes up actually quite often. I like to start with how things work in the physical universe, and then we'll move down into systems thinking and how it applies in the workplace. But if we take a look at the physical universe, what we see is that it's made up entirely of systems and subsystems, from the largest features to the smallest. So we might be talking about things in terms of galaxies, for instance, and then all the way down to particles, subatomic particles, we see that it's all systems and subsystems, and everything is connected. Now, everything in the physical universe works perfectly and synergistically and always has. However, when the human mind gets in between and starts to create its own systems, these systems oftentimes do not work well together. They don't play well together. And so what we are really looking at is beginning to see the world, and in particular the workplace, as systems and subsystems, and in particular, how can we begin to think in terms that will allow us to identify those systems that when we optimize, we are going to make our businesses better and better and be able to take better care of our customers.
That makes a lot of sense to me, just as far as things organically and naturally working together and how the human mind can interfere with those things. So I can really resonate with that. I've noticed that even my own mind, as I watch it, it seems like an inclination that we have to work through by these established systems. Now, you say systems thinking is absolutely critical to good leadership and management. Why is that?
Well, one of the people who has was probably the most renowned in systems thinking and systems improvement was a man named W. Edwards Deming. And W. Edwards Deming was probably the number one quality and system improvement guru ever. He's actually the guy that is credited most for turning around Japan after World War II. And what he told us is that 94% of the results that we experience in the workplace, both good and not so good, are a function of the systems in which people work, not the efforts of those people. And so if you think, gosh, 95% or 94% of our the results are in the systems, if we're not systems thinkers, if we can't make those systems visible and identify those parts of the system that we need to change in order to set our people up to be successful, we really have no way to know how to lead or manage. And so this idea that as a leader and manager, there may not be a more important skill set than systems thinking, because that's going to allow you to make the changes that are going to produce the results that you and your people want, as opposed to spending your time looking at how to change people's behavior, which is how most of us in leadership and management roles have been taught. We've been taught to, you know, look to the people. If I just get better people, things will get better. But for the most part, that is absolutely incorrect. And it's one of the reasons that we are not creating really amazing, remarkable businesses on a regular basis.
You know, a little offshoot of the same question, being critical to good leadership, could you at least give an idea, maybe a bullet point or two, what does good leadership and management look like within this example?
Well, my feeling, and within the new agreements model, is that the first thing we have to do if we want to look at to improve our businesses, if we want to know how to manage people and how to set them up to be most successful, is we have to know how to make these systems visible. For the most part, they're invisible. People just don't see them. So systems thinking allows us to make the systems visible. And then, of course, the systems tools allow us to go in and take a look at what are the critical 20% of the variables which are producing 80% of the results we want to change. And so this idea that we start to become systems-based in the way that we lead and manage allows us basically to be working on the critical 94%, the results that are being created by the organization, and do what leaders and managers are really supposed to do, which is to set our people up to be successful. Because if the systems are not optimized, if they are not set up for our people to be successful, they for sure are not going to be producing the results that we want to produce.
I think it's no coincidence that in the last 50 years, the Harvard Business School has talked a lot about radical visibility and what it means when people are engaged in a company. So how did you become a system thinker?
That's an interesting story. At least it was. I found that part of my life to be interesting. I made a really poor decision back when I owned my company. As we were doing, as we said, about $10 million in sales and had a couple hundred employees. And I hired a president and COO and basically took my eye off the business and sort of delegated to him to run the operations. The long and short of it is he did not know what he was doing, and he ended up running the companies really into the ground. And we lost actually several million dollars. And I ended up with instead of a $10 million company, I had a $7 million company and a negative net worth of almost $2.5 million. So, for any of you who, read balance sheets and income statements and things like that, you know, that's a really dire situation to find a company in. And so I had been dabbling with Deming's work and some others, but not really diving into it. And so I realized that to really have any chance to turn the company around, we really needed to dive into the systems work. And I did that. And it took a couple of years, but we got the company turned around and we became profitable again. But along the way, probably the biggest blessing that came to me from all of that was really learning to be a systems thinker, really learning how to apply these principles in the real world. You know, it's one thing to consult, but it's another thing to really, talk about being involved, really being at risk. If you didn't get it, being at risk of losing your business, losing your reputation, that sort of thing. So I found that to be very, very blessed, because although I would have never done it on my own, the crisis management allowed me to really get in there and to really learn it. And then, of course, when I'm working with other leaders and managers and they say, oh, I've got this problem or that, I can say, yeah, I understand. I've been there before. And I think it allows me to speak from my experience as opposed to speak from theory.
Yeah, and it's evident when you've had your own business and learned from real-life examples rather than just through textbook and actually experiencing it and feeling the pain, that gives you a way different connection to leaders and managers when you've been in their shoes before is a story. But you've also now dedicated yourself for a pretty long period of time to achieve mastery in the understanding and application of system thinking and all the related agreements that you talk about. So what are the new agreement systems improvement tools that I've heard you mention in your work?
One of the things that I found when I went out and I was consulting in corporate America, and we were basically using this systems-based approach to solve problems and to improve businesses, and we were doing a lot of turnaround work and things like that. What I saw was that when I would start to teach some of the basic tools that people like Deming and later Peter Senge and those types of programs, we were teaching basic what's called statistical process control. And statistical process control is math and it's, formulas. And it's, they're wonderful tools, but not everybody in the workplace has signed up to learn those things and to become proficient in those things. And I found in a lot of cases, people's eyes would start to glaze over. People would become afraid, maybe they couldn't learn it or they'd be made to look stupid or something like that. Middle managers, they really had a problem with it in most cases because they're supposed to have the answers and now they're put in a position where they might not look good, in trying to learn these things. And so I thought, there's got to be a way to simplify these things, make them easy, make them so they're not intimidating. And so I spent about maybe a year, 18 months going through and actually reworking these tools, the basic tools for systems improvement, and putting them into a format that is easy and simple and fun and that aren't necessarily intimidating for most people. And we found that these tools were, if they could be learned, we could have people actually doing a pretty good systems work in just a day or two of training. And also, even for people who English is a second language, they were even able to grasp, you know, how to use these tools and even maybe get excited about really starting to make a difference in the work that they do. So we have a complete set of tools that we've been using for quite a while now that we feel are really a step above a lot of the traditional systems improvement tools that have been out there for probably the last 50 years or so.
It's wonderful when you can blend in the, some of the great minds of our time, Nobel Prize winning type thinking. And it's interesting to me that you call them tools, like it's something practical that you can just take out and use. I have some other questions I want to ask, but could you at least define the parameters of when you call something a tool? What does that mean in this context?
What we find in the workplace is that pretty much all of the work that we do in one way or another is going to be associated with tools of some kind. For instance, a pencil is a tool, as is a pen.
Right.
And believe it or not, there are better pencils or pens for your particular use than, let's say, average or just, you know, any pen or pencil, you know, taken out of the box. So tools are used pretty much everywhere in the workplace in one way or another. So the tools that we were looking at in systems improvement, we basically backed into, in some ways, some very profound underlying principles which allow these tools to be maximally effective. Rather than trying to use a hammer for every single job, we now have a set of tools which are appropriate for particularly the speed of change that we're going to produce in using the four new agreements. As an example, one of the tools or principles that are embedded into the tools that we use is the law of dissipative structures, for which Ilya Prigogine won a Nobel Prize in 1977. And the law of dissipative structures describes what happens to systems that resist change in a changing environment. Now, think about the workplace and think about change. You know, how many times when we go in there to make changes as a leader and manager do we run into resistance? I'll just ask you, Robert. I mean, you've been there. What's it like when you go in there and you say, okay, we're going to create a lot of change right now. What normally happens?
Usually you fail.
Yeah, I mean, people don't stand in line to change. A lot of times there'll be a few that go, yeah, this is exciting. We're going to really change and grow. But the average number of people take the wait and see. You know, they're not really going to jump in until they see that this could actually work. And then you're actually going to have normally some people that are absolutely opposed to it, and they're not going to do it. You can't make them. So the law of dissipative structures basically talks about how do we make these changes both at the level of the systems in which people are working and at the level of people's thinking. So as Einstein reminds us, we cannot solve our problems with the same level of consciousness used to create them. We've got to grow. We have to grow our thinking. We have to become systems thinkers. We have to get beyond the old paradigms that basically are the root of whatever systems that have been created, particularly informal systems, which most of them are. So this idea that we now have a way to accelerate change using the law of dissipative structures, both for the systems and in people's thinking, is a tremendous tool. It's actually, I think, it's the one tool that really separates this work dramatically from most of the other work that I'm familiar with in business and systems improvement.
Interesting how you've blended science that creates changes in the physical world and can touch on the subatomic particles as well as even our own solar system, and brought it down to a practical system and tools that you can use in everyday business in simple language. Could you drill down a teeny bit and give us a few examples of how some of this may work in a real-life company example as far as systems and tools and science?
Well, maybe I'll just throw in a little bit more on the science side of it, and then we'll talk
okay.
a little bit about examples. Another very powerful universal principle that is part of our tools and our methodology is Bell's theorem. And the John Stuart Bell showed us that everything in the universe is connected. And this is critically important in the workplace because everything is connected, and when we act as if things are not connected, we run into all sorts of problems, such as silos, lack of communication. You'll see most of the big problems that show up in the workplace are in the handoffs from one department to another, from one function to another, that sort of thing. And the reason for that is that the outputs of one system become the inputs to another one. And if your inputs to your system are not correct, then no matter what you do after that, you are not going to get the results that you want. It's that simple. So Bell's theorem tells us, look, everything's connected, and we have to begin to lead and manage as if that's true, because it is true. And then finally, Bucky Fuller, he was the Leonardo da Vinci of the 20th century, in my opinion, and many others. And he tells us that every thought is a system. It's a system. Well, what that tells us is that whatever tools we are using on the systems improvement side in the physical world of the workplace are also applicable, for the most part, in looking at how to shift paradigms and how to expand our consciousness to include systems thinking and the four new agreements in the workplace. So that, to me, I think, that is just hugely impactful, the fact that we have tools for rapidly changing both the physical systems and what we're going to call the mental models, which in many cases keep the old systems in place. They have to shift. They have to expand. So that, I would say, is... Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt. It just kind of brought to mind, I've heard the sentence many times in recent years, to change your thinking, change your life. And if just thinking your systems, it also means changing your business. You know, it's just interesting, how do you not only get these systems to influence structure, but also the thinking of your company. Any comments on that side of the system?
Absolutely. We have the two sides of it. You know, there are really two sides of an integrated whole. One of them is the physical systems, and the other side, which is equally important, is our mindsets or our thinking. And we have to do both. If we just work on the system side of things and the physical systems, such as the work that we're doing with programs such as Six Sigma and Lean and that sort of thing, what we see is that for the most part, people will wait it out and basically undo even very good systems work. And if we turn it around, and let's say we just work on the people side, we're going to empower the people and we're going to work with servant leadership, we're going to take good care of the people, what you'll find is if you don't change your systems, you can't change the results. And you're not setting your people up to be optimally successful. So it's a integrated whole, and we have to do both. And one of the big reasons why most of these programs that people are doing, and we're spending billions of dollars on systems improvement programs that are underperforming or failing, and we're spending billions of dollars on attempts to build teamwork, to get people engaged, to somehow bring down the 70% of the U.S. workforce that are disengaged. And what are we getting for all that? Not much. And the problem is that we're not taking it on as an integrated whole. We're looking at pieces of it. We've got to do the whole thing.
I love that connection of the balancing of those two, along with the visibility and the systems. And we have just a little over 4 minutes left here. Talk a little bit how about people can find out more and such. What's a final thought that our audience should be keeping in mind on this very important third new agreement, Be a System Thinker?
Well, I really believe that systems thinking is the number one most important skill set that any leader or manager can have. The entire world shifts when you begin to think in terms of systems, and for the better. And I believe that systems thinking should be taught to our children starting in preschool, and it should be taught every single year through graduate school. And there should be refresher courses on it, because unless you understand the power of systems, you get what you get. And that's what we have right now. We are getting what we're getting. It's not optimized by any stretch of the imagination. And these huge, intractable problems that face our planet and that face humanity and really all life on this planet right now are not going to be solved doing the same things over and over and expecting a different result. We have got to change our thinking. We have got to expand our consciousness in some way, and our mindsets, to include seeing things as integrated systems, which they are. And then we'll be in a much better position to be able to address those problems. And my goal is to create a movement whereby leadership and management start to move toward this new model, and that the workplace becomes a catalyst for making the changes we need to make in this world that we can make in no other way.
Love that answer. It certainly leaves me wanting to know more. How can our listeners learn more about the third new agreement, Be a Systems Thinker, the power of systems thinking in the workplace, and upcoming seminars? Could you share a little bit about that? What can they do to find out more?
Happily. you can go to our website. It's the number 4, new agreements, the number 4, leaders.com. So it's 4 new agreements, 4 leaders.com. And you can go to our training page, and you'll see that we are doing a one-day training, the 4 new agreements for leaders and managers, on June 10th. Here in San Diego, actually in Oceanside, California. So this is going to be, it's a very powerful one-day program where you're going to be exposed to all of these and actually have an opportunity to begin applying some of these principles in your own business or in your own work. So again, June 10th at 4newagreementsforleaders.com, and believe me, this will be the kind of experience at the end of the day. You'll be coming out of your head spinning at the possibilities.
Well, excellent. I really appreciate your time. We just have 1 minute left, and if I could indulge you for 1 second, I just wanted to share this from Peter Senge, quote, "The bad leader is he who the people despise. Good leader is he who people praise. The great leader is he who the people say, we did it ourselves." Can you give a 20-second response to that?
Yes. If when you start to take a systems-based approach to leadership and management, the people do the systems improvement work. It becomes how they do their work. You basically move into a support role. How can you help in some way? But when your front lines get this, everything shifts. And at that point, it becomes sustainable. It becomes a part of your culture. And they do it themselves. And you will be a great leader.
Thank you again, David Dibble. We appreciate your time. We look forward to your June 10th webinar. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robert.